Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to the program. I'm Sister Janet Ferns. Embrace the excluded. It is very easy to keep people at a distance. With the best will in the world, we can cite irreconcilable differences between people of varying nationalities, cultures, languages, and traditions. Within a multicultural, globalized world, we talk about enculturation but still manage to miss the point. Without a conscious effort to see the world from the point of view of the other, we can never grow in understanding, acceptance, and appreciation of each other's inner riches. We exclude people from our lives, even involuntarily. In today's programme, we take a closer look at the real implications of enculturation. We also reflect on what can be done to help those who, under intense pressure of one kind or another, have had an abortion, only to regret it afterwards. How might we embrace those whose actions might be a temptation for others, in their lack of understanding, to exclude them from the care that they need? But first, Charles Collins reminds us of the Pope's message from today's general audience.
Over 15,000 people greeted Pope Benedict as he arrived in St. Peter's Square for his weekly general audience on Wednesday. After arriving at the steps of the ancient basilica, the Holy Father continued his weekly catechesis on early figures in the Church by speaking of St. John Chrysostom.
Our catechesis today focuses on a great orator of the early Church, St. John Chrysostom, the golden-mouthed. After his schooling in Antioch, St. John went into the desert to meditate on the law of Christ. Illness forced him to return to the city, where he hears the Lord calling him to full-time pastoral service. Years of prayer had prepared him to preach the word of God with tremendous power and persuasion.
In his Italian remarks, Pope Benedict mentioned an incident where the saint preached a series of sermons against a set of new imperial statutes. The people of Antioch had been protesting a tax rise. The Holy Father drew a laugh by saying that in the course of history, nothing ever changes. He also spoke of the Church Father's support of the family.
Chrysostom constantly strove to connect Christian doctrine to daily living, emphasizing lifelong human development in a person's physical, intellectual, and religious dimensions. Fundamental to this is the first phase when parents must firmly impress God's law upon their children's souls. Young people will thus be strengthened to confront the storms of adolescence when they must learn to temper concupiscence and eventually to assume the duties of marriage. Indeed, St. John taught that the family is a little church within the wider ecclesial community. Consequently, each of us has a responsibility for the salvation of those around us. Through the intercession of this saintly bishop, may we generously embrace this and all our responsibilities in the church and in society.
After the audience, the Pope greeted participants of a conference to help officials of church tribunals. Held at Rome's Santa Croce University, it focuses on the centrality of marriage and family to the Church. I'm Charles Collins.
Enculturation is a complex concern for many in today's world, yet its meaning is often learned through the pains of homesickness. We now reflect on the importance of seeing the world through the eyes of people of differing cultural backgrounds.
People who need people are the luckiest people in the world.
Bring people together from several countries or from a range of cultural or linguistic traditions, and the result might be multicultural, but the group has certainly not experienced enculturation. When Father James McCurry, the provincial of the English and Irish province of the Conventual Friars Minor, visited Vatican Radio with its 61 nationalities amongst the staff of the radio, it was an ideal opportunity to speak of the meaning and the impact of enculturation. We spoke first of the efforts that the friars are making within a multicultural Britain and Ireland.
Don't try simply to have friars of one nationality in one friary, but that we have a real mixture, so that even in Britain and Ireland, now where I work, we're trying to have our friaries reflect the multinational and intercultural image of British and Irish society today as well.
Which is not always easy.
It isn't, and it's not easy for British or Irish society to have a true intercultural spirit, nor is it easy for Franciscans to have a true intercultural spirit within our houses. We strive for that. We know it's an ideal, and we need to be formed for that. We need to have help in becoming more sensitive, because it's the little issues that will become problematic if we don't address them. We need to be welcoming to friars who've been formed in different programs and nations, and they need to be open to the fact that they're entering a new country with different expectations.
Yes, because I remember from when I myself was in Zambia, you've got the Franciscan Study Centre in Lusaka, and you've got the Conventuals, you've got the Capuchins, you've got the OFMs, and you've also got the Franciscan Missionaries of the Divine Motherhood within the one complex. But you've got the student friars from over the whole of Africa, and not everybody speaks English when they come. So not only have they got to adjust to a completely new country and a different culture, they've also got to learn a new language as well.
They have to adjust to food, dietary differences. They have to adjust to different preoccupations in the home cultures. The language barrier is enormous. And the only way to adjust is with the spirituality of supernatural charity. That it sounds overly pietistic maybe to say that, but at the basis of genuine interculturality that is gospel-based has to be a desire to put the gospel mandate of love into a practical expression by the way we treat one another and are sensitive to one another. So I think we need help to do that, and this is why our general chapter spent so much time talking about formation for mission, because we feel that we don't want to send anyone to any mission territory without properly forming them for what they will be facing. Nor do we want to bring any friar from a developing country to study in a place like Canterbury without helping them in advance to know what they'll expect when they come to Canterbury. Although I must say the British and the Irish are still quite accepting. And we brought a friar from India to work in Dublin. And I don't know how many people have thanked me for bringing this wonderful young friar priest to work in our ministry in Dublin, that his smile radiates everything that we consider the best in our Franciscan tradition, and his homilies reflect a sound formation. So people in our islands I find to be quite accepting, but it's still a challenge, and we don't want to take anything for granted. And we, at the Franciscan Study Centre in Canterbury, we have several nationalities doing all types of courses in sabbatical programs in various degree programs in catechetical formation, and they come there from perhaps as many as 25 countries. So it's a challenge even there in our kitchen to give them the opportunity to experience something of the home so they won't be so homesick.
Because people often don't realize how important food is when you're moving between countries, because you might think, oh, it's only a detail. But for an Asian, they really miss the rice.
They do.
And for somebody from England or Ireland, you can really miss the potatoes and right. just little things like that.
Tell me about it. As much as I love Assisi, as much as I love Italy, my tongue is hanging out for a decent cup of tea. I can't wait to get back to London and make my own pot of tea. So there are certain things that we just take for granted that nobody else would realise unless you bring it to their attention.
And when we talk so much about inculturation within the order as a whole, within the church, inculturation, although food is an important part, inculturation doesn't just mean you have rice on the table if there are Asians, you have potatoes if there are English or the Irish or whatever nationality. Inculturation also involves a mindset, doesn't it?
It does. Inculturation, I think the two most important things we can say about inculturation is based in the biblical reality of Jesus's self-emptying. Though he was God, he did not deem equality with the Father and the Spirit something to cling to. Rather, he emptied himself and became enculturated in the Palestine of 2 millennia ago. So that sets the template for authentic enculturation. And the second thing is he did so in a context of solidarity, a community. And he formed a community around himself, and he taught them how to be intercultural. There were differences between the apostles and among the disciples. And by Jesus enculturating himself and entering into a community that he taught to have solidarity and charity, he set a paradigm for all future enculturation. Then when the apostles went out to evangelize the world, they brought that paradigm into the world. And so the gospel itself is a message that cannot be realized without enculturation. That's, enculturation is not just a nice window dressing on the gospel. It's essential to it.
Because one of the difficult things when somebody moves between countries is that even if you know that some of the people who are around you, the vast majority of people in that country do not share your past, although you're sharing your present and you will have to share your future. But that shared appreciation of past, of history, and of where I have come from is very, very important, isn't it?
It's very important, and sometimes we have to carry that as a secret treasure in our hearts, and sometimes we can't. Part of our enculturating into a new culture is that we can't impose even our cherished past on the people who are welcoming us. And I think that Jesus had to keep some of his past, some of his relationship with the Father and the Spirit in the communion of his relationship with them. He couldn't reveal all of it to the followers with whom he formed a community on this earth. And so too, when we go to other cultures, we keep within our hearts the treasured memories of the past, but we can't always impose that on them. Although now and again, we have the opportunity, if we're invited to do so. And it doesn't have to be an invitation offered in words. Sometimes people genuinely want to know about the songs that you sang growing up. They want to hear someone sing the Fields of Athenry, or they want to hear See You Do, a little Irish step dance. And it opens them to express some of their own songs and dances of the past. And then there becomes a true intercultural exchange. But first there has to be a gesture, a sign of welcoming that, of rather than simply imposing. I'm not going to go to a mission and immediately start teaching all of the mission children to sing Short and Paddy Dear, having heard the news that's going round, the Shamrock is forbid by law. So you need to, that's the intercultural sensitivity that you need to base on the gospel paradigm.
Yes, because also part of enculturation is learning to take on your viewpoint into my life so that I can see the treasures of your past through your eyes. And I mightn't be able to accept it at all, but I can see it as precious.
Deep in your soul, says you are half now your whole. No more hunger and thirst, but first be a person who needs people.
Might we embrace those whose actions might be a temptation for others, in their lack of understanding, to exclude them from the care that they need? How can we help those who have been pressurized into having an abortion?
I am telling you that God loves you. He has guided your history to this moment for you to hear from Anne, who has aborted two children, that God loves you and your baby loves you.
Coming to terms with an abortion can be very hard. A woman will realize that her baby has been killed before it had a chance to be born. Anne Lastman founded Victims of Abortion to help women to find peace and to make peace with their baby. Anne describes one personal initiative.
The most beautiful, and for me, it never fails to move me, is this. Someone who has no religious belief at all, but you say to them that their baby lives with God, then the tears come. You see, they don't have a belief, but they want the baby to live with God.
And they want that baby to live.
Yes. And we do. I have a different ritual that I do with someone who says they have no religious belief. And even when they tell me that, I think one of the first things that goes is the baby. The second thing that goes is God. Because you can't, in all integrity, you can't stand before God and after having done what you've done. But so when someone has a non-religious profession, I say to them, okay, let's do something as a memorial to your daughter. And often we will plant a native tree in the bush, in the Australian bush, in where we call the dandenongs. You know the dandenongs?
Oh, the dandenongs are okay. Beautiful.
Okay. That's where we plant by a native. And I remember the first time I asked why a native in the Dandenongs. And the girl said to me, because a native, even if there's a bushfire, a native will regrow. My daughter will live forever. And I also, with the help of several others, have set up a children's memorial garden in the parish grounds of a church in South Melbourne, in Australia. And we have a wall with an infant, a sculpture of an infant. And on the wall we put 3-inch by 2-inch bronze plaques with the baby's name, not aborted. Mine says, in loving memory of my son and daughter, Joseph and Miriam. Even the sparrows have found a home, a swallow its nest near your altars, O Lord. Forever loved, Mummy.
That's beautiful.
So that's what we. That's the last step that we do. We have the mass, the plaque, and then we have big hugs, and they go and come back if they have a blue day.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly, because I have to be careful for attachment purposes, that they don't become attached to me inordinately.
Rituals and symbols are an essential aspect of finding peace.
The things that we need to do most of all is the rituals and symbols, which are totally absent within a bush.
Because just as human beings, rituals and symbols are very important.
Yes, they speak to our inner self. And with an abortion, there's nothing but negative words. You can't do this. It's not a baby. Everything about an abortion spells death, actually. But the symbolic speaks of life, always. I tell you what, when I say to you, golden arches, what do you think of? McDonald's.
Yeah.
Food. We have, for example, in Rome, you'd probably think different things. You use different examples. But the symbols, when we have a funeral, there are things we do to close the story, which help us along the journey to closing. I remember going from Melbourne to Perth in WA, where I originally come from. My best friend died, and I went to her funeral and I saw her in the coffin. And for me, seeing her well a year ago and seeing her in the coffin was very difficult. But the thing that helped me to cope was putting in her hands a flower I knew, one only, that she wanted, that she liked. For me, coping with Katrina's death meant being able to talk to her and telling her off, which is what she would have done for me.
Yes.
Closing things that we do which help us along the journey. With abortion, there's none of that. With an elective abortion, especially, because a decision is made, actively made, to terminate the life of this baby of theirs. Recently, about 2 weeks ago, I went to Sydney. I use loosely these words because I know you know, having lived in Australia, you know what I'm talking about. And I spoke to gynecologists and obstetricians about abortion for fetal abnormality, and to be very careful, because these days when an ultrasound or tests are done for fetal abnormality, the very first option given is abortion. Cleft palate, abortion. Down syndrome, abortion. Everything, abortion. And what they don't seem to understand is, first of all, that it's usually very advanced, this pregnancy. The baby is very much a wanted baby. This is not an unwanted pregnancy. Mm. And what they're asking is that the parents make a decision at what moment their baby dies. And then they are left with that decision, having made that decision. Now, I've dealt with them, and it breaks marriages up. One of the girls has said to me the last thing she remembers of her 22-week baby, which was aborted because of trisomy 13, was that as she was climbing the stairs to the hospital to go and have the termination, the baby kicked strongly. And as, in fact, she said to me, Michelle said to me, "Anne, touch here, it's kicking." It wasn't kicking, but she can still feel 2 years after the abortion as she speaks. It's almost somatic disorder, that she can feel the baby kicking 2 years after the event. And I said to these guys, these doctors, please don't offer them abortion as their first choice. Because if you don't necessarily put this option there, they may not even think about that. Don't put them into a situation where they think they're doing the right thing. Because maybe they'd be quite happy to have a Down syndrome baby. Down syndrome babies are beautiful and loving.
Incredibly loving.
Yes. And yet, when was the last time you saw in the streets a Down syndrome baby? They're not being born anymore.
They're not.
No. As I said, I spoke with these guys, and they were very gracious. But they did sort of explain that legally they have to offer that, because they then are liable to be sued. So we live in a very sad society. I don't know if you were there a couple of years ago in Australia when that woman was awarded some humongous amount of money because her abortion failed and she had a perfectly normal child, a son, and she sued the abortionist for some humongous amount of money because she had a normal child. And I think, imagine this baby, this boy, this young man, growing up thinking that first of all, mum attempted an abortion, and then she went for money.
And so we come to the end of our programme for today. You can hear it all again in whole or in its parts if you go to our website at www.vaticanradio.org/English. I'm Sister Janet Ferns. Until we meet again, may God bless you.
You've been listening to the English program of Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.